Chapter 27. But news reached the village from a friend of Phyllis's father concerning Mr. Humphrey Gould, her remarkably cool and patient betrothed. This gentleman had been heard to say in Bath that he considered his overtures to Miss Phyllis Grove to have reached only the stage of a half-understanding, and in view of his enforced absence on his father's account, who was too great an invalid now to attend to his affairs, he thought it best that there should be no definite promise as yet on either side. He was not sure, indeed, that he might not cast his eyes elsewhere. This account, though only a piece of hearsay, and as such entitled to no absolute credit, tallied so well with the infrequency of his letters and their lack of warmth, that Phyllis did not doubt its truth for one moment, and from that hour she felt herself free to bestow her heart as she should choose. Not so her father. He declared the whole story to be a fabrication. He had known Mr. Gould's family from his boyhood, and if there was one proverb which expressed the matrimonial aspect of that family well, it was "love me little, love me long." Humphrey was an honorable man, who would not think of treating his engagement so lightly. "Do you wait in patience," he said. "All will be right enough in time." From these words Phyllis at first imagined that her father was in correspondence with Mr. Gould, and her heart sank within her, for in spite of her original intentions she had been relieved to hear that her engagement had come to nothing. But she presently learned that her father had heard no more of Humphrey Gould than she herself had done. While he would not write and address her affianced directly on the subject, lest it should be deemed an imputation on that bachelor's honor. "You want an excuse for encouraging one or other of those foreign fellows to flatter you with his unmeaning attentions," her father exclaimed, his mood having of late been a very unkind one towards her. "I see more than I say. Don't you ever set foot outside that garden fence without my permission. If you want to see the camp, I'll take you myself some Sunday afternoon." Phyllis had not the smallest intention of disobeying him in her actions, but she assumed herself to be independent with respect to her feelings. She no longer checked her fancy for the hussar, though she was far from regarding him as her lover in the serious sense in which an Englishman might have been regarded as such. The young foreign soldier was almost an ideal being to her, with none of the appurtenances of an ordinary house dweller, one who had descended she knew not whence, and would disappear she knew not whither, the subject of a fascinating dream no more. They met continually now, mostly at dusk during the brief interval between the going down of the sun and the minute at which the last trumpet call summoned him to his tent. Perhaps her manner had become less restrained latterly. At any rate, that of the hussar was so. He had grown more tender every day, and at parting after these hurried interviews she reached down her hand from the top of the wall that he might press it. One evening he held it so long that she exclaimed, "The wall is white, and somebody in the field may see your shape against it." He lingered so long that night that it was with the greatest difficulty that he could run across the intervening stretch of ground and enter the camp in time. On the next occasion of his awaiting her, she did not appear in her usual place at the usual hour. His disappointment was unspeakably keen. He remained staring blankly at the spot, like a man in a trance. The trumpets and tattoo sounded, and still he did not go. He had been delayed purely by an accident. When she arrived she was anxious, because of the lateness of the hour, having heard as well as he the sounds denoting the closing of the camp. She implored him to leave immediately. "No," he said gloomily. "I shall not go in, yet the moment you come I have thought of your coming all day." "But you may be disgraced at being after time." "I don't mind that. I should have disappeared from the world some time ago, if it had not been for two persons, my beloved, here, and my mother in Sarbrick. I hate the army. I care more for a minute of your company than for all the promotion in the world. Does he stayed and talked to her, and told her interesting details of his native place, and incidents of his childhood, till she was in a simmer of distress at his recklessness in remaining. It was only because she insisted on bidding him good night, and leaving the wall that he returned to his quarters. The next time that she saw him, he was without the stripes that had adorned his sleeve. He had been broken to the level of private for his lateness that night, and as Phyllis considered herself to be the cause of his disgrace, her sorrow was great. But the position was now reversed. It was his turn to cheer her. "Don't grieve, Main Leiblich," he said. "I have got a remedy for whatever comes. First, even supposing I regain my stripes, would your father allow you to marry a non-commissioned officer in the York Hussars?" She flushed. This practical step had not been in her mind in relation to such an unrealistic person as he was, and a moment's reflection was enough for it. "My father would not, certainly would not," she answered unflinchingly. "It cannot be thought of. My dear friend, please do forget me. I fear I am ruining you and your prospects."
"Not at all," said he. "You are giving this country of yours just sufficient interest to me to make me care to keep alive in it. If my dear land were here also, and my old parent, with you, I could be happy as I am, and would do my best as a soldier. But it is not so. And now listen. This is my plan. That you go with me to my own country, and be my wife there, and live there with my mother and me. I am not a Hanoverian, as you know, though I entered the army as such. My country is by the Tsar, and is at peace with France, and if I were once in it, I should be free.
But I'll get there?" She asked. Phyllis had been rather amazed than shocked at his proposition. Her position in her father's house was growing irksome, and painful in the extreme. His parental affection seemed to be quite dried up. She was not a native of the village, like all the joyous girls around her, and in some way Matt Faustina had infected her with his own passionate longing for his country, and mother, and home. "But how?" she repeated, finding that he did not answer. "Will you buy your discharge?"
He said. "That's impossible in these times."
"No, I came here against my will. Why should I not escape? Now is the time, as we shall soon be striking camp, and I might see you no more. This is my scheme. I will ask you to meet me on the highway 2 miles off, on some calm night next week, that may be appointed. There will be nothing unbecoming in it, or to cause you shame. You will not fly alone with me, for I will bring with me my devoted young friend Christoph, an Alsatian, who has lately joined the regiment, and who has agreed to assist in this enterprise. We shall have come from yonder harbor, where we shall have examined the boats, and found one suited to our purpose. Christoph has already a chart of the channel, and we will then go to the harbor, and at midnight cut the boat from her moorings, and row away round the point out of sight, and by the next morning we are on the coast of France, near Cherbourg. The rest is easy, for I have saved money for the land journey, and can get a change of clothes. I will write to my mother, who will meet us on the way." He added details in reply to her inquiries, which left no doubt in Phyllis's mind of the feasibility of the undertaking. But its magnitude almost appalled her, and it is questionable if she would ever have gone further in the wild adventure if, on entering the house that night, her father had not accosted her in the most significant terms. "How about the York Hussars?" he said. "They are still at the camp, but they are soon going away, I believe." "It is useless for you to attempt to cloak your actions in that way. You have been meeting one of those fellows. You have been seen walking with him, foreign barbarians, not much better than the French themselves. I have made up my mind, don't speak a word till I have done, please. I have made up my mind,
that you shall stay here no longer while they are on the spot. You shall go to your aunts. Apostrophe, it was useless for her to protest that as he had never taken a walk with any soldier or man under the sun except himself. Her protestations were feeble too, for though he was not literally correct in his assertion, he was virtually only half in error. The house of her father's sister was a prison to Phyllis. As he had quite recently undergone experience of its gloom, and when her father went on to direct her to pack what would be necessary for her to take, her heart died within her. In after years she never attempted to excuse her conduct during this week of agitation, but the result of her self-communing was that she decided to join in the scheme of her lover and his friend, and fly to the country which he had colored with such lovely hues in her imagination. She always said that the one feature in his proposal which overcame her hesitation was the obvious purity and straightforwardness of his intentions. He showed himself to be so virtuous and kind. He treated her with a respect to which as he had never before been accustomed, and she was braced to the obvious risks of the voyage by her confidence in him. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.